This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. As always, do rate, review, and subscribe. We're up on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Coming up in just a little bit, we will be joined by Colin Wilson of the Action Network. Get some way too early thoughts. We'll just kind of dance around, do some SEC, Big Ten, do a little Big 12, ACC, and it's going to give us a team that is very much on his radar to make some noise in the G5. So look forward to that conversation. So a quick open, and you know, this time of year, we're all hunting for value, right? And last year, the value was easy if you played it, and that was Indiana to win the title, 200 to 1, 100 to 1, whatever it was. And I think something that we're going to do throughout the offseason is continue to hunt for the value and continue to ask ourselves, was 2025's Indiana run a blip or more of the norm? When you look at the two finalists a year ago, Indiana preseason, 100 to 200 to 1, wherever it was. Miami could have found them around 35 to 1. So you had a marvelous ticket going into it. And obviously you could go a step further and what Miami was with the uncertainty if they would make it into the field. So you had an amazing hedge opportunity if you had one of those tickets. In 2024, year one of the 12-team playoff, Ohio State obviously wins the title, but they were most of the summer around plus 375, 4-1, these odds courtesy of Sports Odds History. So much appreciated to those folks. Notre Dame was in the 20-25-1 ballpark. So a decent ticket to have, obviously, but maybe not as fruitful as it was in 2025. But then you go through history of the past 15 years and you look at the national champions, and there really weren't that many crazy long shots that hit. You go back to 2010, Cam Newton, Auburn, 50-1 on May 1st. But then in 2011, Bama, plus 750. 2012, Bama, plus 550. And these are all preseason. Obviously, things changed a little bit during the season. 2013 was pretty interesting because Auburn was 500-1 to win the title in January. Now, they ultimately lost in the national championship game, but they had an opportunity for you to hedge off of. And Florida State that year was 40-1. But, you know, it's crazy when you look up and down. The only long shot that you could have got from 2013 on was LSU, the Joe Burrow year. They were 60-1 on March 4th. Everyone else kind of in that 8-12-1 range. So as we get into the early portions of college football, and we start to get our minds going about who are the teams that we like. And I think what helps us as handicappers, and we talked about this with Brad Powers last week, there is no spring portal. So there shouldn't be too much movement from here on out. No more coaching changes, no more coordinator changes. Everything should be pretty much in place. Now, injuries obviously could throw a wrinkle into all of this, but as you look at the board right now, and I'm looking at DraftKings, obviously look around, you've got four teams at 7-1, Indiana, Texas, Ohio State, and Notre Dame. I know none of us want to play those teams at those current prices, but does it make sense to look long and hard at one of those teams? Because history has told us that chalk tends to prevail in this sport. However, recent history tells us, when it was the last two Heisman Trophy winners and Travis Hunter and Fernando Mendoza being massive long shots, or the national champion last year in Indiana being the biggest long shot in the history of the sport, is that going to lead us to going a little bit further down the board, to look at a Penn State, who we will talk about with Colin Wilson, to look at a team like, I don't know, SMU at 100-1. I'm just throwing teams out there, but I think what we have to try to put together as we enter this college football season is, was 2025 in the Indiana run a blip? Because obviously we're never getting Indiana at that price as long as Kirk Cignetti is there ever again. Or was it a perfect storm of a great coach that hit amazingly in the portal and that we just underrated them because of the jump from year zero to year one to the playoff, the loss to Notre Dame and Ohio State in the fashion that they had. And we didn't believe them until we believed in them, which was late in the season. So just some food for thought as you look up and down the board, and we all in the offseason, where's the value? Where's the value? History has told us most of these national champions are in that 5-1 to 10-1 range in the offseason. But with the expanded playoff and the portal, is that going to be more of the norm, what we saw last year with Indiana and Miami making it to the national championship? Quick break. When we come back, Colin Wilson will join us from the Action Network. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. And as promised, Colin Wilson, Action Network, one of my favorite people in the college football gambling world, joins us right now on a way too early start to the college football season. But anytime we could talk a little college football, there's nothing wrong with it. Mr. Wilson, Arkansas, the greatest nine-loss team in the history of college football a year ago?
Well, I mean, the second-order win total says so. I mean, they should have been more of a 5.5 win. And usually you carry that over. I remember this one bullet point iteration. I think Miami of Ohio under Chuck Martin, I think they had like a second-order win total that was like 3 or 4 games off every year for the span of like 5 years. I think this was literally like 2016 to 2020. And they just could not seem to get over the hump in these one possession games. And so you kept playing the second order win total game the next year, the next year, the next year. And it finally, like, they started winning all the time. Like, it was like 3 years of progression. So can I promise that Arkansas is going to have a better record the year after, like, such a huge second order win total edge? Maybe. I mean, the Silverfield thing is a very interesting hire, not the way I would have gone.
Yeah, Ryan Silverfield, we were talking about it last week with Brad Powers, and I gave you guys an extra win. You were 2-10. I said 3-9, so 2-10. But I am curious, and we're going to kind of just bounce around. I mean, you look at the schedule. Good God, welcome to Arkansas. North Alabama, you get an easy start, and then it's at Utah in week two. And I know, you know, it's a new Utah era. Kyle Whittingham has moved on, and then a home game against Georgia. So it is not an easy start to anything down there in Fayetteville. But I guess big picture, when you look at this Arkansas team, a team that you know more than really anybody in this space, what do you make of the Silverfield hire? What have you made of the portal so far?
Well, it's going to be a complete change in offensive scheme from Bobby Petrino down to Silverfield, and he's going to try to run his inside-outside zone that he did at Memphis. We got to find a quarterback. It's an open battle for everybody. We got to find, you know, I'm sure Smith is, I'm sure the pieces from Memphis will fall in well. That'll be fine against North Alabama. Is that going to work against Georgia in the third game? Is that going to work against Texas A&M in the fifth game? I don't know if you can somehow supplant Memphis's team, stick them in Arkansas clothes. Another thing, too, is like Silverfield went and reoffered all the 3 stars in the state of Arkansas. Like, that's not going to get the job done in the SEC anyways. We didn't hire a coach that is making our bigwigs pull out their pocketbook and buy defensive tackles. I like the effort, and you're going to see a lot of transfers coming in, but we lost a ton, so you have to backfill. That doesn't mean that we got a quality of a player in the pipe. So even though, crazy enough, mathematically, I make them about 5.1 wins, which would dictate to go over, I think, this early number that's come out, I have a lot of question marks about Silverfield, but there's always that first-year coach bump, the enthusiasm, the excitement, the willing to do better. And then also with first-year coaches and win totals, think about this. I don't generally go under on first-year head coaches. Why? Because the roster is still playing hard in the final 6 games for their coach. No matter if they have 1 win, 2 wins, 3 wins, they're battling till the very end because it's first-year coach.
So I'm glad you mentioned first-year coaches because we got a bunch of them in the SEC. LSU is going to be the one that gets the most love out there. And obviously the portal king, Lane Kiffin, has been very busy. What do you make of LSU in year one under Lane?
Well, they kept Blake Baker, their DC too. I think that's good for the defense not to have any sort of scheme change or have to learn anything new. So I think that's great for them. Of course, the portal haul was going to be insane with Lane Kiffin. I think Charlie Weiss Jr. has kind of proven himself to be a very good standalone offensive coordinator, not needing Lane to be there, especially with the college football playoff run. You expect Sam Leavitt to be Heisman level, which he can be. He was, I think for a long time, we all thought Jordan Tyson was the real deal out in Arizona State. Turns out the quarterback was pretty good too. When Sam Leavitt was battling Jaden Rashada and everybody else out there at Arizona State. So you have a very high ceiling for LSU with Lane coming in, but at the same, I mean, you also have a very high floor.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to go well, and is Lane Kiffin going to be able to coach himself into the playoff? Is he going to be able to get to 11 wins? You know, I think the number, if we go to the game of the year market, I think that very first game is completely out of control, but it's also narrative driven, right? So you have LSU, I believe it's 11.5-point favorites out there against Clemson. Like, after all the adjustments I've done with returning experience, with coaches, with second-order win totals, I think this game should be 5. I mean, I would have made it 4 at the end of last year. So I think what you're seeing is massive perception that Lane is there and everything's going to be okay. I would be aware of buying any LSU futures because they're cooked. I mean, this game of the year that's got them 6 points higher, like crossing 7, crossing 10. I don't know who's going to go out and fire on Clemson this early. I think there will be buyback on Clemson, but the general public's not coming in on Clemson this game up until kickoff.
Right.
No one's betting Clemson in this game. So I don't know if I would touch in the game of your market, but I think the number's wildly off.
Yeah, 11.5 right now at FanDuel. Pretty wild to see that number between LSU and Clemson. Of course, LSU going to Clemson last year and getting the win. So with LSU, we've got Pete Golding now officially. I don't know if we consider him a first-year coach. I certainly do. And then they get the massive news. You know, when we recorded last or 2 weeks ago with Brad, we didn't know about Trinidad Chambliss. He is, as of now, looks like he is going to be back for another year for Ole Miss. So is Ole Miss a team that you anticipate to back? How are we looking at Ole Miss this year? You know, you look at the start of their season. You have a challenging game in Nashville to start the season against Louisville. Then you have LSU in week 3, which is just amazing to get Lane returning in week 3. What are we looking at with Pete Golding year 1?
Yeah, I mean, the win total that I make for Ole Miss is 7.2. The return of Trinidad bumped their offensive stats from like 57% overall coming back up to about 75%. And when I do a returning experience, it's, you know, how many offensive line snaps did you have? Very small, minuscule rushing yards coming back. Receiving yards is big, but the passing yards is big too. And Trinidad coming back really kind of pushed them over the hump to where they didn't take a negative in returning experience. And their second order win total was positive too. So there are good things, but the schedule is impossible this year. And sadly, from a conference win total perspective, I got them at 4.5. They're right in the sandwich with Tennessee, Florida, just a half game shade conference-wise behind Auburn. So it's still an uphill battle. And I think, you know, Pete Golding has still got to prove that he can be one of the big coaches and beat his peers on a week-to-week basis without Lane Kiffin being there. I mean, it's one thing to be amped up and have a month prep to go into the college football playoff. And then, you know, continue that on and kind of base your offense around two players, really. Let's see what they can do this time around. Because that offensive line for Ole Miss last year was insane. Like, nobody was touching Trinidad Chambliss. And part of that was a scrambling, but they literally were not allowing any pressures and sacks. Can that offensive line keep that up? And what is, I think, a tougher schedule? We're going to find out how good Pete Golding is by himself.
You know, Auburn, it was a massive failure with Hugh Freeze. And now they go to Alex Golish. Last year, I think it was either you or your partner in crime, Stucky, on your podcast, who loved USF week 1 as a dog at home against Boise State. Everything went their way. They win that game going away. Then they respond by an ugly win, but it was a win. I'm not trying to take anything away from it, against Florida. And then it kind of set a lot of people up, including me, of just an amazing sell high spot on them against Miami. But still, all that being said, they beat North Texas a year ago. USF did. They beat Florida. They beat Boise State. What do we expect with Golish bringing a lot of these South Florida Bulls, including his quarterback Byron Brown, over to the Plains?
I don't think we can do any worse than we had with Hugh Freeze. I mean, there was such dysfunction there, and I don't think people understand it. Like, Hugh Freeze throwing his own players under the bus in the press conference afterwards did not sit well for a year and a half in that program, and I think you could see some of the sort of the unrest and the unhappiness. When you bring in the portal class that Auburn had last year with the three top wide receivers, they pulled them, and then these guys were like 130th in passing explosives. Like, how do you pull the top three wide receivers out of the portal and then end up one as the bottom five in pass explosives? I don't know. I would expect this offense to be a lot better, but it's Byron Brown, right? It's going to be ground-based. It's going to be zone reads. But they did mark over 100% returning experience on the offensive side of the ball because of all of this juice they're bringing in from South Florida. So I expect fireworks. I place them at about 8.4 wins, conference-wise, 5.5. They're just outside this top tier of five teams in the SEC. Schedule is brutal as always. I think, you know, we'll see what Golesh is worth because, you know, he showed up against Florida, big high-intensity game, and then the drop-off was just like against Miami. Like, it was a terrible spot. We all knew it was a terrible spot because Miami, I think, had who? Bethune-Cookman the week before? Yeah, like, I mean, it was one of the worst spots ever, but there has been times where South Florida's kind of like lost games that they shouldn't. And so I kind of wonder if that's going to creep into some play at Auburn here, which would be typical, right? Par for the course for Auburn, where they lose games they shouldn't. They compete in games that they shouldn't be in. So we'll see how it goes. So I don't know. I have to wait to see a win total come out. But I'm pretty bullish on them. The fact that they supplanted their offense for the Bulls and placed them in at Auburn, the numbers say they should do pretty well.
Well, it's kind of funny when you look at the American, they got rated by the SEC in a couple of spots, and one of them being Auburn, another being Arkansas, and then Florida, John Summerall, goes to the Gators. And it was kind of a foregone conclusion. Summerall would be in the SEC, back in the SEC. It's just where would he go? And ultimately, it's Florida. They open up with Florida Atlantic and Campbell, and then when you know it, they go to the Plains to take on Auburn. So it's kind of fun to see those two go head-to-head. What are you expecting from John Summerall in year number one in Gainesville?
I think what's not being talked about enough is that Buster Faulkner is now the new OC. I mean, you're bringing in John Summerall, who has this elite pedigree for what are we calling them? Group of six, group of five? For the at that stage, you know, there's nothing worse than John Summerall. And by the way, you know, John Summerall has been talked about by a lot of Power Four head coaches, like, this is the next star. This is the next star. Well, now he's finally here, and then he has the ability to go out and get Buster Faulkner for an offensive coordinator. Brad White has been a good DC at a lot of Power Four stops. This is a great coaching staff that was put together. They got my highest mark in changes to their power rating when it came to a coaching perspective. A little positive from second order win total from Florida versus last year, and a major bump in returning experience, almost the highest you could get. That makes them number 14 overall in my power ratings, which is, you know, we just talked about Auburn and Ole Miss. They are sandwiched directly in between those two within the top 15. So I expect them to be hot out of the gate. I'm sure there's going to be an appetite in the futures market for them. I place them at 7.5 wins, so we'll see where they come out to.
All right, Colin, we're going to kind of bounce around other conferences just to wrap up the SEC on our kind of way too early look. Who is a team that maybe you expect to be higher on and a team that maybe you expect to be lower on than the perceived public perception? Well,
I wonder if the public is going to be selling Vanderbilt or if they're going to stand pat with them, right? How far is the drop off Diego Pavia? I think it's massive. I think it's absolutely massive. Like, I mean, I bring them in at 6.1 wins, but I think I would play them down to 5 whenever the market comes out. You can't replicate what Diego Pavia does in a spreadsheet, and you can't replicate what he's going to leave empty. I mean, he's got to account for probably 80% of their total plays. I mean, it's going to be insane what the drop off is.
Are they going to be starting, Colin? Are they going to be starting the true freshman Jared Curtis? Is that the thought?
That's the latest that I've heard, and I'm not sure. You know, I mean, look, Clark Lee is not a guy to shy away. He's probably going to come out and say, you know, this is what we're going to have to do to rebuild for, you know, coming up. But, you know, and I also wonder if Clark Lee is still calling his own plays on defense. He took that role over last year. It was a massive change. It was a massive boost to Vanderbilt for him to call the defense. Is he still going to call the defense and be in control of that coming up? So I think Vanderbilt's one team where it's like the mathematical projections will, you know, they'll account for, I mean, I got them sub 50% on experience both sides of the ball. I just don't think it's a big enough drop in my numbers. So that's definitely one team that I'll be selling. As far as buying, I mean, there's really nobody at the top that we're going to be surprised by. Texas A&M, Georgia, Texas, LSU, and then Oklahoma filling in at that 5 spot. Mm-hmm. So I think if there's a team that could potentially bounce, South Carolina is bringing 94% of their offense back, 71% of their defense back. They seem to be always pesky and in game, especially with how much havoc they produce on defense. Lenoris Sellers is coming for what should be his NFL draft season. You know, we'll see what he's got. So, again, it's one of those teams that I've got at 7 wins in the middle of the pack of the SEC, but they could really do some damage to some of the big boys. If there's a team on here, and I don't know, I didn't hear your interview with Brad, and I usually listen to everything you and Brad do, but if there's one team on here that I can't believe how low they are in my numbers, it's Alabama. I'm not even sure if I want to publicly admit how low I have them. Like, if I said they're going to win 7 games, all the trolls from Twitter would come out and tell me how dumb I am. But I'm telling you, the numbers are so anti-Alabama, it's gross.
He's not high on them either. He's low on them as well. So I think you kind of keep it hush hush, and we can maybe hit some win totals when those start to circulate a little bit. You know, Colin, I opened up the podcast just kind of looking at history and, you know, how unique this year was, which was Indiana at the price that they were to win the national title, and just pressing and tells us that doesn't happen. But maybe are we in a new world, or was that the exception? Well, I want to start with Indiana in the Big Ten, because I think most of us didn't expect a drop off, but I did not expect what I saw last year, which was a 16-0 team. What do you expect in year three of the Cignetti machine in Bloomington?
I have them as a top two team right up there with Ohio State. I've got them at 11.1 wins. I've got them at 8 wins, 8.1 wins out of possible 9 inside the Big Ten. But this all really hinges on Josh Hoover. Mm-hmm. And I think because this is February, I can get away with saying this, but I better have an answer for this come July, August. And that is, how did Fernando Mendoza go from very pedestrian numbers from big time throw and turnover worthy plays at Cal to turning into the Heisman winner, leading an undefeated team to the national championship? And can Josh Hoover do the same? Because Josh Hoover at TCU is just kind of a gunslinger, right? Throw it up, see if they can pull it down. He's had some amazing big time throws, but he makes a lot of mistakes. And it's very much more a gap with him than it was with Mendoza at Cal. Like, there's so many more big time throws and there's so many more turnover worthy plays. Is Josh Hoover going to get the proper coaching on the offensive side of the ball to bring him in and have him do Mendoza type stuff? So, you know, from a returning experience perspective, 84% on offense, 66% on defense, not worried about the defense being coached by Cignetti. So we'll see what they can replace, because that running back group, those offensive linemen, those besides Pat Coogan, who came from Notre Dame, that was such a JMU influx of talent. Yeah. Can we find a team out there like that again? Maybe Chesney at UCLA? Like, is there somebody that's bringing their team from the G5 that's going to dominate? I think we need to keep our eyes open, because is that the new thing? Stars don't matter. Experience does. We need to figure that out.
Yeah, no, we talked about it a bunch on the podcast. It's like, you know, the baseline that he was able to bring in from James Madison, it was hard to equate for it when it looked at the Stars. You know, October 17th, let's try to get to that now. Indiana, Ohio State, giddy up. That's going to be a blast in Bloomington. But you mentioned your top two teams in some order, Indiana, Ohio State. So Ohio State, great regular season, comes up short in the playoff, obviously losing to Miami. What are you anticipating from the Buckeyes? Is it just roll right along with Brian Hartline leaving? Any worry there from an offensive coordinator standpoint?
Again, this is one of those things where I definitely need some more time other than February. They hired Arthur Smith. That was a late hire, right? Yep. I mean, they went without a coordinator for a while, and then Arthur Smith gets tapped. He's going to come in. So the problem with Brian Hartline was how slow the offense was. Ryan Day was not happy with it whatsoever. He wanted a little bit more tempo, and he wanted to get the plays in faster, and he didn't want all this shifting and this motion. Like, the Hartline offense had really, there was a lot of, I would say, leaks about how unhappy Ryan Day was with that. So will Arthur Smith have a little bit more of a tempo? I think we should watch out for that. I know that I'm currently trying to write a piece right now on totals. Where is there new offensive play callers? And what is your delta going to be between your seconds per play last year and your seconds per play this year? Ohio State's definitely on the list, but I got to do some research on Arthur Smith, see how fast he's going to call this offense. So, you know, you can't say they have a lot of experience coming back. They had one of the highest marks in that. Their second order win total was kind of nah. I think the research on Arthur Smith is going to determine whether this is a play on team, stand and watch, or maybe we take some totals over the mark if some books are adopting last year's totals for Ohio State.
Oregon, you look at their schedule, Boise State at Oak State. That could be interesting. Drew Mestemaker, home dog in week two, could be kind of a fun game with the Ducks coming to town. Conference-wise, you've got at USC, at Illinois, at Ohio State, home to Michigan, and then your rivalry game to wrap it up against Washington. Plus a couple new coaches, Pat Fitzgerald, Bob Chesney, so interesting kind of schedule makeup there for Oregon. But they get the big news that Dante Moore is coming back. Stewart should be healthy this year. So look, I never expect a drop off from Oregon. Where are you on this Ducks team right now?
I mean, they're over 83% both sides of the ball and what they're returning from experience. I feel this has become more of a system than it is coordinator driven. Because Tosh Lapoy exceeded all expectations I had for him as a defensive coordinator. Because there wasn't good the previous stops that he'd been at. As a matter of fact, I believe there was a story like Saban's like, Tosh, you need to go find another job. you know, and I think from an offensive standpoint, I don't think much is going to change for the Ducks. So I think, you know, we have Dante Moore back. We have DeCorian Moore back. I'm sure out of all the, I mean, what did they have? Six running backs at one time last year? I'm sure, you know, half of those come, but with 89% coming back, they're going to be elite and they're going to challenge. Sadly, I've got them below a team that I think is going to be a big surprise, and that's Penn State. Now, Penn State's pedigree doesn't say they're going to be a surprise. The easiest schedule I've seen of any Power Four team. Now, just eyeballs, right? I've done the math to see if they actually are, but just eyeballs is Penn State. This is one of the biggest joke schedules I've ever seen, and who they dodge in the Big Ten is notable. I think there's another thing, and I wrote about this, you know, I think the day after the national title. What's Matt Campbell's calling card? Tight ends, lots of tight ends. What does Penn State produce? Lots of tight ends. And they've got some pretty talented five stars in there right now. So I think the marriage of scheme to what the roster was at Penn State is a bonus for Matt Campbell. He's stepping into probably the most plush schedule. And you know, from a defensive standpoint, he's bringing a 3-3-5 to what was already a nickel defense. So I think Penn State's going to be hot out of the gate. I really do, because of who they dodge. I think that it's one of these teams that if you can get like a 4-1 on them to just make the Big Ten championship, I think that's definitely a playable number because of who they dodge, and maybe tiebreakers work out for them.
Well, you look at their schedule, as you pointed out, you get USC, but you get them at home. History tells us that USC is not going to travel well. You do have to go to Michigan, kind of an up in the air situation there with Kyle Whittingham year one. And then you have to go on the road to Washington, which certainly could be a unique challenge. But who are we missing? You're missing Indiana. You're missing Oregon. You're missing Ohio State. So you're missing a lot of the big boys, so to speak, to get Wisconsin at home. Maybe that's a team that has a bit of an upgrade as well. So, you know, I'll say this too about Matt Campbell. You know, when does he do his best? It's when people don't expect him to do well, right? Those Iowa State teams that had those expectations never seem to live up to him, but maybe this is the perfect spot for Matt Campbell in year number one. Speaking of new coaches across the Big Ten, you've got Pat Fitzgerald. He goes to Michigan State. You've got Kyle Whittingham. He goes to Michigan. We'll start there. What did you make of this marriage? I know Utah, it seemed like, was kind of giving him the push out the door. Hey, it's time to turn over to Morgan Scalley. I don't think he was pleased about the exit, if you will. Nope. So what do you expect from Michigan under Whittingham this year?
Well, I definitely don't want to go against Kyle Whittingham when he's got a point to prove, yeah. Right? He brings his offensive coordinator over with him, Jason Beck, which I think is great because really Utah had been so depleted from injuries on offense and limited on playbook about what they could run. They needed an infusion of a new offense, which Jason Beck ran. I'm a little shocked Devin Dampier isn't here.
Me too.
I'm wondering if that spells bad for Utah that he got left behind. But, you know, then again, you do have probably what is the best quarterback, and one of the best quarterbacks in the nation here. So, you know, we'll see how they do. Jay Hill needs to be mentioned as a hire as defensive coordinator. This coach, if you're not familiar with him, was one of the best FCS coaches that was out there, and also as a defensive coordinator. Comes into BYU and takes, I believe, BYU was hanging around 120th in every single defensive split. Jay Hill got them all up within the top 50. And so it's going to be very havoc-minded. I think it is a perfect fit. I think the roster is going to match too. So I'm high on Michigan. I gave them a bump for the coaching perspective, pretty neutral on second order win total, and then only a few points boosted on returning production. But I think it's a good fit for the coaching staff, and I really like the fact that Jason Beck came over. As far as Michigan State goes, like, did we improve from Jonathan Smith over to Pat Fitzgerald? Joe Rossi's going to be your DC, which is good. He knows the conference, but that doesn't mean that you got the results that you needed in your previous stop. So again, this is one where they got -4 points to their power rating because of returning experience. They got -2 points for migrating on coaching staff. And really how I grade coaching staffs is, show me your efficiency, show me your explosiveness. And if the staff you're bringing in has a 3-year sample that's worse, you're going to get docked, right? That's just how it works. So, so it was a bunch of negatives for Michigan State. And, you know, I have them hanging around in the 70s in my power ratings around just above Purdue. Boy, Sparty has fallen off.
Tell you what, man. Week one, I know people are going to expect with Jason Candle going to UConn that Toledo's going to take a drop off for the nerds like us. And Brad even mentioned it. Do you go get Mercer's head coach? Like, this could be a tricky spot there week one. So just keep that under the cap there for people. That's kind of a funky offense that Pat Fitzgerald might be having to throw out their face in week number one there for old Sparty. So interesting one there. I want to circle back, Colin, to UCLA. You mentioned Bob Chesney, James Madison. Their last couple of coaches, just for you, just to recall, was Kirk Cignetti, then it was Bob Chesney. So a couple guys that have done decent. So I'm not fully anticipating.
And now Billy Napier, right? Yeah,
Sunbelt Billy, back to the Sunbelt. We have some listeners out there. There you go. There's your Sunbelt Billy reference. We did slip one in there in week number one, but UCLA, they're going to bring a lot of the James Madison guys over. Obviously, it's a portal heavy squad. You open up the season at Cal, which is pretty fun to start the year. It's not an easy entrance into the season here for UCLA. Right. At Cal, San Diego State, and then you take on a conference foe in Purdue. But what are you expecting from Bob Chesney? Obviously, he's going to look great in the Rose Bowl with his sunglasses on and that great hair. Are we going to get some wins to follow that?
I think so. I mean, they probably pulled, I think, the highest you could possibly get as far as a PR bump for me. They got the highest in experience coming back. They also got a 3-point bump for me in a power rating just for the coaching staff that they're bringing in. And that is also a reflection of where they came from and what Deshaun Foster had going on there. I know it trickled and fired and there was interims and all that, but you're going from the basement to a coach who has proven, I don't want to say like he's following Cignetti and he didn't drop right. The ball while he was at JMU, but still Chesney was great at Holy Cross. Like we mentioned Mercer, like Mercer was the team we were betting on last year from an FCS level. Well, a couple of years ago it was Holy Cross, right? And that's all Chesney related. So you're right. The schedule, not kind. I mean, I wouldn't want to play San Diego State if I was kind of rebuilding and I was wanting to pick a team out of the G6 level. I would much rather prefer Nevada the week after that than I would San Diego State. But, you know, Oregon's on here, Michigan's on here. So this isn't an easy thing by far. I think what's more interesting is, can the teams hopping two time zones actually perform? You mentioned that with USC. I still don't think that they've won a game. I think when they've traveled two time zones, so that's why you kind of get Penn State the win there. But here with UCLA, like how many times are they going to go three time zones over to Maryland, two time zones to Michigan, two time zones to Minnesota, and then Cal and Oregon, they stay on the coast, but that's their travel. So, you know, three different trips. We'll see if they can overcome that, if Bob Chesney, you know, can get them over the hump in that perspective. But no, this isn't an easy schedule, but I make them 7. I will probably be higher than anybody else when it comes to their win total and some of their futures just because of the pedigree that Bob Chesney brings in.
Yeah, certainly could be, as you mentioned, kind of a game-to-game situation too to find UCLA and a first-year coach. They're not going to quit as the year goes on. A lot of James Madison guys coming over. All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break with Colin. When we come back, we'll hit some quick thoughts on the ACC, the Big 12. We'll wrap things up here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. All right, we're back more with Colin Wilson. By the way, Colin, a phenomenal college baseball handicapper, so please do give him a follow on Twitter, and he's going to have great insight coming your way already for college baseball at Colin1. You got rid of the underscore.
Yeah, I did. Actually, Twitter has this feature now where you can go and request like somebody that's not using an account, and the underscore has been a pain in my butt for so long. I was like, can I get it without an underscore? And they're like, yeah. And they just made the flip. I was like, I didn't know it was that easy. So
big news. I did not know that. Maybe I need to request it.
Right.
I need to request the @TimMurray handle because I think that hasn't been used in like 15 years. So maybe I'll go make a request. But let's get to just quick thoughts. ACC, Big 12, just kind of sum things up. Once again, we'll have Colin back on later in the summer and we'll all be a little bit more in tune where we're at. But just kind of starting things early here. We'll start with Miami. You know, they get the big move. They get Mensah. However they did it, they were able to get him to come down to Miami. And they also are able to get Cooper Barkate. Malachi Toney is back. They've got some really good pieces returning. Reuben Bain, obviously, Mezzadora both gone. But when you look at this Miami team, are they now the class of this conference?
They are from a new mathematical perspective. Now, does that mean that Mario Cristobal has fixed all of his clock issues. I mean, there was a run to the national title game without any major faux pas that we've seen in his previous part of his career. But, you know, this is the class of the ACC. I've got them at 10.6 wins. And from a conference perspective, it's really hard to talk about conference wins. I think everybody, if you wanted to have something to talk about around the water cooler, half the teams are playing 8 games, half the teams are playing 9 games.
So I've
got them slated at 8.37 wins in the conference, but at the same time, they play 9 and some play 8. And I don't know how the tiebreakers are going to work, but I have Miami all the way at the top, followed up by SMU, Louisville, and Clemson kind of peeking in there. But yeah, from Miami, 75% coming back on the offense and just 58% on the defense. I'm not really worried about the defense at all under Corey Heatherman. You know, Miami's pedigree of the defensive players they're going to have. I'm not really worried about that drop off. Obviously, you're looking to see what they have at the edge position to still see if they can create some havoc. But then again, does SMU's offensive line, Louisville's offensive line, Clemson offensive line, how much do they return? So that's kind of the homework there that I would look at, because Miami won last year for dominating in the trench. Their offensive line and their defensive line. You know, Carson Beck was good when he needed to be good last year. And Malachi Toney, does he have a real Heisman shot? A lot of the voters, the vote would be, they just don't want to give it to anybody but a quarterback.
Right.
But at the same time, Malachi Toney is talented enough to win the Heisman. I would need at least triple-digit odds to ever bet a non-quarterback, but he's that good.
You look at the schedule for the next team I'm going to mention in the ACC, Virginia Tech. You got VMI, Old Dominion, and then Maryland to start the year. Then you get Boston College to start your conference run. It's a bit backloaded, if you will, from a conference standpoint, at Clemson, at SMU, and at Miami. And then you wrap up with the Commonwealth Cup against Virginia. I think long term, I love this hire for Virginia Tech. I know we all have made the jokes, and they were deserved, of James Franklin never winning the big game. But if you're Virginia Tech and you can get 10 wins consistently, you'll be very happy with not big game James down there in Blacksburg. But do you see it right away? What do we see in year one in Blacksburg?
From a schedule perspective, yeah, they're going to start off hot. We'll see if that momentum goes. I maybe I'm the only one that thinks it's weird that Brent Pry is the DC.
That's very
and,
weird.
I mean, I get the relationship with Franklin, but to me, that's strange. But, you know, and we'll have to see. I think Ty Howie's the offensive coordinator. We'll see how that translates to what Virginia Tech can do. But you mentioned the schedule. Like, they're favored. I believe my numbers make it favored by 74 over VMI. I wouldn't be surprised if Franklin comes out and tries to do that. You know, Old Dominion sitting around 10 the following week after that. Maryland could be a coin flip. But, yeah, Virginia favored by 6. Boston College favored by 16. So these are just the numbers that I'm looking at. And until they get to the back half, the Clemson, Miami, SMU, can they be bowl eligible at that point? Right. I mean, they will already be a huge success. And then obviously, if they need another bowl win, then Stanford and Pitt are there at the end of the year. It's a schedule that screams 7, maybe 8 wins. And I project them at 7.1 wins. It's going to be nice for a season for James Franklin to get Virginia Tech, who everybody thinks is going to be on track. But this is one of the softest schedules in the conference.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You mentioned SMU. I know there was some belief that maybe your alma mater, Arkansas, would be chasing Rhett Lashley for whatever reason. He ultimately stays with the Ponies. SMU's not afraid to spend the cash. They still have, you know, their quarterback, Kevin Jennings, is back for another year. They open up with a Labor Day game against Florida State, which is unique because Florida State will have played a game prior, so Florida State gets a week zero game against New Mexico State. But you mentioned SMU right now as your number two team in the ACC. So what are we looking at with the Ponies?
Yeah, I mean, I have them at 9.6 wins to open up the season. I've got them favored by 2 over Florida State. So we'll see if the whole trend of you already played a game, does that hurt you because there's so much tape out there and you haven't seen SMU? So it could be a benefit there. A little bit of a break against UC Davis after that. But there's just so many double-digit favorite spots on here. Missouri State by 39, Boston College by 30, Virginia, Cal, Syracuse, all at least 14, Virginia Tech 11, Wake Forest 18. I mean, these are monster games. Like, the spreads are projected to be just so large. Like, even at the end of the year, Stanford minus 25.5, there's 9 games by my count that are at least 11 points or more, with SMU as a favorite. So I think this is one of those win totals where if it comes out at 9, you could easily fire over. I don't see the schedule at all how they get to 8. If they eight wins, I think is impossible with this schedule. So if it comes out at a flat nine, you got to play over.
So you mentioned Miami and SMU, your two top teams, and you also alluded to Penn State having an easy schedule. Notre Dame has a very easy schedule, but they do have SMU and Miami. They get both of them at home. They go on the road to Provo. They play Wisconsin at Lambeau, but Notre Dame will be a favorite in every single game this year, probably double digits in at least nine, maybe 10 games. A lot's returning defensively. They do obviously lose Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price. Malachi Fields is kind of blowing up in the draft process, their wide receiver. So it's a unique offense, but you bring back CJ Carr. Curious what your numbers jumped out to you with the Irish heading into this year.
Maybe the highest win total I have, 11.28. I think 11.3 would make Irish fans pretty, but let's talk about where the loss is at, right? There's really only two games on the schedule, and I think you've named it already. Like, sub 10-point favorites, BYU and Miami. That's it. You know, can you go out to BYU and survive that? It should be a pretty raucous crowd. Mormons and the Catholics getting it on. And then you got your Catholics versus convicts again with Miami, but that's a home game, right? Yep. So I think it's, I said this last year at the beginning of the season, I said, there's no world where Notre Dame goes 10-2 and misses the playoff. I would love to say that again, but I don't think this team gets to 10 wins. I think they easily get to 11. I'd be shocked if they didn't go 12-0. But I think the transition is what are you doing at your running back position? Uh-huh. Are you going to be able to backfill that? Is CJ Carr going to be more mobile? I think it's interesting that he's at the top of the Heisman board, right? Above Manning. I mean, there's a lot of expectations for CJ Carr here. You're above Trinidad. You're above Arch. That's some high expectations. But then again, when you look at this schedule, like what defense on here is going to stop them day one, right?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the running back. I think a lot of Notre Dame fans, myself included, like you're going from the greatest running back in school history, a guy who's going to be a top 10 draft pick, and the backup is probably going to be a second round pick. Like, you know, it's a pretty big drop off there. That was his binky as a freshman quarterback. So it's going to be a lot more on his shoulders. Aeneas Williams did have some moments, certainly 2 years ago in the playoff, catching the ball out of the backfield. So, yeah, we'll see. You know, the offense, I think, has some high upside. And unlike last year, Colin, they're not going to play Miami week one. Not to say that Wisconsin's going to be a joke, but I think easing into things a little bit more this year as opposed to having your two most important games week one and two.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, if CJ Carr is mobile, that opens up the playbook, right? If we can get more Riley Leonard inserted to what, if CJ Carr is ready to run that kind of offense, it's there. I think it's also important when you maintain your coordinators and you've had success with them before, I think that's a good thing. The fact that you're keeping Den Brock and Ash, you know, say what you will about Ash drop off from Al Golden, but it doesn't matter. You're keeping your two coordinators. And I think continuity is such a big thing in college football. So definitely nothing bearish about Notre Dame. And, I'm still a little bit shocked CJ Carr is leading the Heisman vote. Like, that's crazy. I mean, there's above Arch and Trinidad. That's crazy. There must be a huge appetite out there for him.
That gold helmet he wears, I think, helps that number. And I think the schedule, to your point. All right, let's wrap quickly on the Big 12. Another joke of a schedule is Texas Tech. I mean, should we just pencil them in? Are they automatically in the Big 12 championship on this schedule?
If I was allowed to bet on the Heisman, Sorsby would be the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, it is a joke. It is a joke because the defense alone is good enough to win the conference. And just to explain, I have them at 8.99 conference wins. They only play nine. Like, I got to go and look and see who is it that's like within 21 points. 21 points to me is where you're 100% favorite, right? So I probably should go look and see who is it that's within.
Because just for those who don't know, Texas Tech this year does not play BYU or Utah in conference play, and they get Houston at home, Arizona at home, Arizona State at home. Like, their road games are at Colorado, at Oklahoma State, and at Baylor, and at Cincinnati. Like, where are the losses?
I've got the game. So the one game that is making Texas Tech go from nine potential conference wins to 8.99, I have them favored by 20.5 at Cincinnati. And if you don't think Sorsby's going in there to throw 600 yards, you're crazy. So it's a joke. I don't know what the odds makers are going to do. Are they going to put like an over 11.5 minus 200 out there? I mean, you're returning. I mean, essentially you pumped it all into the defense. They're coming back. They're going to be the most havoc minded in the conference. They're going to dominate the conference again. And really, Sorsby is such an upgrade at quarterback. I don't think people understand like how good he is underneath the hood. You know, Texas Tech got a little offensive minded here in the portal. That's going to really benefit them in this conference. So again, I hate to sound squarish, but there's no way I would go under. And I don't think the books are going to be able to catch up with how good this Texas Tech team grades out mathematically for me.
All right. Well, we'll wrap on this. The floor is yours, sir. A team that has your eyes opening up like a cartoon character.
Oh, my goodness. I almost went Pac-12.
You can go wherever you want.
Yeah.
Man. Pac-12, by the way, how about the, I think that came out. Maybe we'll close the podcast on that wacky schedule. Like, good luck, oddmakers, on the open date last week of the season.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going through it right now with some of the new coaches and the ones that really stick out to me. Like, even Colorado State getting Jim Moore is even though I project them. Yeah, that's a really good upgrade for them. And it doesn't necessarily have to be out of the Pac-12, but I guess I'll leave everybody with this. I make New Mexico the top dog in the Mountain West. And, you know, I think they have the best coach along with Troy Calhoun, who I also project to be second in the Mountain West. But I think with Boise leaving, you got a real shakeup here of names that you're going to see. And I can expect that probably UNLV is going to be at the top. When these conference odds come out, you'd expect to see UNLV and Dan Mullen up there. You might even see some Timmy in Hawaii up there at some point getting some odds. And I'm at Northern Illinois. It's going to be interesting to see how they regroup in this conference, losing Thomas Hammock like that. But that being said, New Mexico is my top team. I power rate them 8.3 wins, most conference wins. So I'll be looking to bet on the Lobos to win the Mountain West when the numbers come out.
Well, we will definitely have you on when everything is settled, and we'll get rocking. Colin Wilson, check him out when it comes to college baseball. Also, some thoughts on his Arkansas hoop squad that I think has the upside of maybe doing some things. So at Colin1, I have to get used to that now that there's no underscore, at Colin1, Action Network, Big Bets on Campus. And before I let you run, for those interested in college baseball insights, where can they find your work?
Yeah, so I write everything up for college baseball at project3straight.com. I think our Twitter handle is P3Straight, which you can go to. And when starting pitchers are announced, they're turned in by scorecards. I've got it automated that it'll tweet out the starters right away. So you don't have to guess and try to go ahead. My college baseball picks will start on March 15th, whenever conference play starts. And if you don't have an Oklahoma 50-1 in your back pocket, you need to. That number is outrageous.
Colin, you're the man. Appreciate you giving us a little early taste to the college football season.
Thanks for having me, Tim.
There he is, Colin Wilson. Quick break. We'll wrap things up next. Thanks again to Colin Wilson from the Action Network for giving us some way too early thoughts on the upcoming college football season. Follow him on Twitter at Colin1. And as mentioned, great college baseball handicapper. Shout out to Matt Grissom, too. Also a very good college baseball handicapper. All right. I wanted to close with this, the Pac-12 schedule. Just a quick thought. 7 games over 8 weeks with a bye in there. The new Pac-12, for those of you who are not keeping track at home, Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State, Oregon State, San Diego State, Texas State, Utah State, and Washington State, and Gonzaga for basketball. They don't play football. The schedule is just bizarre. So when you look at it, you've got these 7 conference games. You still have a conference championship game. And then week 13, the weekend after Thanksgiving, you've got what's called a flex game, where it will be a non-conference game, but against one of these conference foes. I guess in theory to maybe have a 5-6 team play a 5-6 team for bowl eligibility. Or is there a game out there to enhance your chances to make the playoff? What if the 2 best teams are scheduled to play the final week? Very odd how it will all play out. And I think the Mountain West adding North Dakota State for me was a winner in this realignment. But I think at the end of the day, they were both losers. I'm not a loser, hopefully, in that way. I'm Tim Murray. This is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.